Eerie pulled back the sheets and climbed in bed. The bedding had been changed at some point, saving Geary the dilemma of either asking for help getting new bedding or sleeping in Admiral Block's sheets. He slept for a long time, his sleep restless with vivid dreams that he couldn't recall at all during brief periods of waking. Eventually, he got up, unable to sleep through the muffled sounds of the working day life of the Dauntless that came to him even inside the well-insulated stateroom. Grateful to find himself feeling stronger, he rummaged in compartments, trying to ignore anything that looked like a personal possession of the late Admiral Block, and found some unopened ration bars that, for all he could tell, were as chronologically old as he was. It wasn't like he felt like enjoying food, though, so the ration bars sufficed for a small breakfast. Now what? Now he had the luxury of time. The Alliance fleet would be in jump space for weeks. He could actually find out a little bit more about what had happened since he'd entered that survival pod and started his long sleep. From what he'd heard and seen already, much of recent history wouldn't make pleasant reading. But he had to know it if he wanted to understand these strangers he'd been thrust into commanding. As it turned out, the modern version of the Sailor's Manual contained what appeared to be a decent condensed history of events since his last stand. Geary skipped hastily over the account of what had once been his final battle. He'd never been comfortable hearing even routine praise for himself. So the idea of reading a worshipful account of his actions made him feel almost ill, especially when even level-headed and experienced officers like Captain Desjani seemed to think he'd been sent back by the living stars to somehow save the Alliance. But as he started to read past the story of Blackjack Geary's last stand, he stopped to stare at the date, almost 100 years ago.
To me, it all happened less than 2 weeks past. I remember it so clearly. I remember that battle, and those people in my crew, and getting into that survival pod with my ship being ripped apart around me, and death riding on my shoulder. It was only 2 weeks ago, but only to me. They're all dead now. The ones who died on my ship, and the ones who got away safe. All the same now. And even the children of those who survived are dead too. All that's left is me.
He put his head down and couldn't think of anything but grief for a long time. Eventually, Geary made it through the history, finding it to be a relentlessly positive account of battles lost and won, making even what sounded like Geary to defeats seem like they'd somehow been part of a master plan. But that was an official history for you. What Captain Desjani had told him of a stalemate lasting for decade after decade was obvious when he read between the lines. As the history drew close to the present day, it seemed to become almost shrill in its patriotic exhortations, a sure sign to Geary's way of thinking that morale was perceived as shaky. The Sailor's Manual had always been intended to teach the basics, so its contents couldn't confirm Geary's belief that the officers and sailors of the Alliance fleet were, on average, young and minimally trained. But as fleet commander, he could access any personnel files he wanted, and those he checked at random all told the same story. Most of the personnel in the fleet had painfully little experience. Few had survived through luck or innate skill long enough to really know what they were doing. But they were a small minority. Each of the great victories celebrated in the history Geary had read had obviously taken a serious toll. Even though the official history didn't admit to any defeats, Geary figured those had cost plenty as well. Having stalled as long as he could, Geary steeled himself and called up the record of Commander Michael Geary. As he'd guessed, and as had been apparent from the way he'd fought his ship, his grandnephew had been one of the experienced and skilled survivors. Not because he'd held back in action, either. Michael Geary had indeed spent a lifetime trying to live up to the heroic standards of Blackjack Geary. he'd finally achieved that goal by dying in battle. A lot of amateurs and a few survivors. No, they were all survivors of a war that had kept going for a long, long time, with occasional ceasefires that had apparently only been agreed to so that both sides could rearm after particularly heavy losses.
I need to talk to these people.
Geary stared at the door to his stateroom, grateful for the protection it offered, but also knowing he couldn't keep hiding here.
I have to get to know them, see how well they can still hold up under pressure. Based on the people I've met so far, they'll keep trying for a while because of their irrational faith in me. What happens after I made enough mistakes? After I made it clear that I'm not the mythical Blackjack Geary, but really just Commander John Geary, promoted to captain after his death.
For the next several days, Geary devoted perhaps half his time to studying and the other half to walking through the Dauntless. He'd set an informal goal of trying to walk to every compartment in the ship. For no other reason than he knew letting the crew see him would be important for their morale. He also desperately wanted them to see him as human before he proved his fallibility again. But he wasn't sure he was making much progress on that account. On one such walk, he stopped by the compartment containing Dauntless's null field projector. The null field's crew stood around, smiling, as Geary stared at the massive, squat device. Something about the size and shape of the weapon made him think of a mythical giant troll, resting on its haunches as it waited patiently for a victim to come close enough. Geary did his best to hide his misgivings and smiled back at the crew.
The weapon's ready to employ?
Yes, sir. It's in perfect condition. We run checks every day just like the manuals say, and if anything looks even a little off, we make sure it's fixed.
We'll be ready, Captain. Any Syndic warship that gets in range is gonna get fogged real good.
It took Geary a moment to realize that fogged must refer to what would be left after a null field shot reduced anything and anyone within its target area into subatomic particles. Somehow, he nodded and smiled in response to the boast. Gunners loved their guns. They always had, and probably always would. That's why they were gunners. And his ancestors knew the fleet needed good gunners.
Well, next time we get up close with the Syndics, we'll see if we can give you that shot. I don't have the heart to tell them that the Dauntless can't be risked if I can help it. There's all too great a chance we might end up getting close to Syndic warships, whether I like it or not, before this is all over.
The Hell Lance battery crews weren't quite as enthusiastic. But then, unlike the Null Fields, their personal toys weren't brand new weapons that they'd gotten to be the first to play with. Geary easily recognized the Hell Lance projectors, even though these bulked three times the size of the ones he'd known.
I bet you wish you had one of these girls along your last battle, eh, Captain?
It would have come in very handy.
Not that you needed one, sir. That battle of yours, everyone knows about it. This stuff today is great, but they don't make ships or sailors like that anymore.
You're wrong, Chief. That's one of the advantages of being Fleet Commander. I get to tell the Chief he's wrong. They still make great ships and great sailors. You all saw Repulse. We'll get the damage to our ships repaired. We'll restock our expendable weapons, and the next time we meet the Syndic fleet, we'll make them pay 100 times over for the Repulse.
Yes, sir. We'll make you proud you commanded us, Blackjack.
I'm already proud to command you.
He had to be escorted by Captain Desjani when he went to see the Hypernet key in its secured area. About half as large as a cargo container, the device took up most of the space in the compartment where it rested. Geary walked around the outside, seeing the power cables snaking into it and the control lines weaving in and out. He looked at it for a long time, wondering at how something so ordinary in appearance could be so important.
Captain Geary?
The only good thing about Co-President Victoria Rione's expression was that it was marginally less cold than her tone of voice.
Madam Co-President,
Geary had been trying to wean himself off the meds and hadn't taken any today, which had left him feeling even worse than usual and in no mood for a visitor. But given her authority over some of the ships in the fleet, he couldn't send Rione away.
To what do I owe the honor of this visit? Would you like to sit down?
No.
If she's trying to unnerve me, she's doing a good job.
She turned and walked the three steps that took her to the far bulkhead, apparently absorbed in studying the picture there. It was a legacy of Admiral Block, of course, a stunning starscape that was just the sort of thing you'd expect to find in a naval officer's stateroom.
What are your intentions, Captain Geary?
Well, Madam Co-President, as we discussed earlier, I intend to try to get this fleet back to Alliance space.
Don't evade the question, Captain. We're en route to the Corvus system. I want to know what you intend doing next.
Rione was apparently one of the few people on this ship who didn't worship the space he sailed through. She'd already made it clear she wouldn't hesitate to express her opinions, and as far as he could tell from their earlier conversation, she had a good head on her shoulders. Granted, she also didn't try to hide her dislike of him, but unlike the hostility of others, at least the Republic co-president's disdain seemed tempered by some degree of common sense.
I'd like to discuss that with you.
Really?
Yes. Though I ask that our discussions remain confidential, I hope you understand.
Of course.
We've got some options.
Options?
Yes. If she can talk in one-word sentences, so can I. We're likely to have a head start through Corvus before any Syndics come through the jump behind us. A few hours, at least.
But the Syndic fleet was in very close pursuit when we entered jump. Surely they'll still be right behind us when we enter the Corvus system.
I don't think so. We'll be disposed like this when we leave jump. It's a decent formation. More important, we've got plenty of heavy firepower toward the rear of the formation.
Heavier than the Syndics?
Locally, yes. When we enter jump, the Syndics were focused on trying to stop or slow some of our big units long enough for their big ships to catch up and destroy them. But the situation will be different on the other side of the jump if the Syndics come through right behind us. They're all strung out. Their light stuff will run head-on our main strength. We could send our own slow units ahead while our best ships stayed at the jump exit and trash the light Syndic ships as they come through. No, they won't have followed us through immediately. They'll have to take time to reform their forces. They can't make a jump in that wall formation of theirs because it spreads so wide the outer portions wouldn't be within jump point. They'll call back the hooks and the other light units, get the heavies rearranged, and then...
Then?
That's a big question. I'd like your thoughts on something.
My thoughts?
Yes. On what we do next.
Then before you say anything else, let me say this. Don't misjudge your strength, Captain Geary.
What exactly does that mean? I'm physically capable of...
No, not your personal strength. The strength of this fleet. Those maps and figures give you a surface picture. They don't tell you what's inside.
Are you saying I can't trust my information?
The information on the fleet is accurate as far as it goes. I don't know the right words to describe the problem. This fleet is like a piece of metal that seems very strong, but when struck, it breaks fairly easily. Do you understand?
Brittle. You're saying the fleet's brittle. Strong looking, but too easily shattered by a blow. Is that right?
That's exactly what I meant.
But not physical weakness. Not flaws in ship construction or weaponry.
I begin to feel certain you know that is not what I'm referring to.
And I begin to feel certain there's more to you than meets the eye, Co-President Rion. I appreciate your assessment.
You don't seem to be startled by it. Frankly, I thought you'd react angrily.
I like surprising people. Which is one reason why I won't tell you that I have no intention of letting this fleet stay brittle if I can help it. Metal can be reforged, tempered. So can this fleet, I hope. Though whether I or anybody else could succeed in doing that under these conditions is another question. I've been trying to get to know this fleet. They're good. But as I was, they're tired.
This isn't the type of tiredness that can be cured by a good night's sleep. If you commit these ships to a major battle, even under the conditions you describe, they may fail you.
I don't intend seeking a major fleet engagement at this time.
That is not a reassuring statement. It is critically important to the Alliance, as well as to the Kallus Republic and the Rift Federation, that these ships return to Alliance space.
I know that, Madam Co-President.
We must avoid losing more ships.
Madam Co-President, contrary to what you appear to believe, I am not in the habit of spending ships and the lives of sailors as if they were loose change rattling around in my pocket. I don't intend to seek out a fleet engagement. I have no idea whether or not the Syndics will be able to force such an action, but I will do all I can to maximize the odds in our favor, no matter what.
That's hardly a promise, Captain Geary.
I don't make promises I can't keep. I can't control what the Syndics do, and I can't be certain what kind of situations we'll face. Surely you understand military realities enough to know that sometimes units must be risked.
Units like Repulse?
Yes.
Very well, Captain Geary. I must add that in the case of the Repulse, I have been remiss. May I offer my personal condolences on your family's loss, as well as my official condolences, and thanks for your family's sacrifice on behalf of the Kallus Republic.
Thank you, Madam Co-President. I didn't know you were aware I was related to the commander of the Repulse.
Yes. I should have expressed my sympathies much earlier, and beg your forgiveness.
There have been many, many sacrifices. As I said earlier, I'd appreciate your assessment on something.
Of course.
We're jumping in here, inside Corvus system. We'll swing through, picking up whatever supplies we can grab in the time available. This is the jump point out of Corvus. We got three possible destinations. Yuan's one of them, and it's pretty near along a straight shot back to Alliance space. Voss, which goes a bit back the other way, deeper into Syndic territory, and Caliban, which just sort of carries us along inside Syndic space, but sets us up to potentially jump to four other stars. Suppose you were the Syndic commanders, Co-President Rion. Where would you expect us to go?
Yuan.
Because?
We're running, Captain Geary. The fleet is running for its life, and Yuan offers the fastest route home. Not fast, by any means, compared to Hypernet, but significantly faster than the alternatives.
Doesn't that make it too obvious of a choice? Too obvious a place for the Syndic fleet to jump into and wait for us?
I repeat, our fleet fled the Syndic home system. We're in hostile territory. Running is the only reasonable option.
All right. I agree we need to run. We also need to avoid getting caught, which means we need to steer clear of an obvious route.
In theory, yes. But we're constrained by the realities of our condition. The Syndics will know you want to go to Yuan, Captain Geary.
But I don't want to go to Yuan, Madam Co-President.
Voss, you're planning on jumping back toward the Syndic home system, then jumping in again, hoping the defenses will be surprised and the fleet off chasing us. No?
No. In a perfect world, maybe. In a perfect world, we wouldn't be fighting a war that's a century old. But I can read those damage reports on our ships, and I can total up the weapons we've expended and the state of our supplies, just as well as I can guess at the current ability of this fleet to handle another major battle. It'd be an insane risk.
I agree.
But the Syndics will have to defend against that chance, won't they? That means putting a block force in Voss and keeping some reinforcements for their home system close at hand. Just in case I'm insane, that'll deplete the forces they have to chase us down.
So you are going to Yuan?
No, I want to go to Caliban.
Caliban? What does Caliban grant us?
Time, and the greatest degree of relative safety. I know time is our enemy too, but it gives the fleet more time to recover. Our auxiliaries are building more expandable weaponry now, Grapeshot, Inspectors, and we'll pick up materials to build more while we're in Corvus, I hope. We'll get more damage fixed. Yes, once we reach Caliban, we'll need to jog toward home, and we'll be in desperate need of resupply, so we'll have to find enough of what we need there. But we'll have a couple of good star options for our next jump. One okay option, and one risky option. That'll leave the Syndics with four places to guard, even if they'd been able to localize our fleet by then.
And what of this degree of relative safety?
We've been beaten up, and the Syndics have us badly outnumbered. But the Syndic fleet doesn't have an infinite number of ships. The more they divide what they've got to try to catch us, the better the odds we'll face if they do catch us. Here, Yuan. They need to put enough ships there to at least hurt us a lot more if we go through that system. But they also need to push ships into Voss to protect against that possibility. They've got to keep the pressure on us, which means a strong force pursuing us through Corvus.
I see. That leaves little for Caliban. If you're right. But how sure can you be that the Syndics will disregard the chance you'll go to Caliban?
I don't think they'll disregard it. I think they'll consider it by far the least likely objective for us, and they'll regard it as much less critical a matter than if we went to Yuan or Voss. Going to either of those stars will create an immediate problem for the Syndics. If we go to Caliban, we're still a problem, but one they'll think leaves them time to deal with us. I just wish I knew what the Syndicates had at Caliban. The little intelligence we have is more than half a century old. Hell, I wish I knew what they had at Corvus.
Why are you explaining this to me?
As I said, I want your opinion.
You sound like you've already made up your mind.
No, I'm trying to formulate a plan, and I'm thinking through the options. You have a different way of looking at things, so I value your impressions.
Then I tell you that I'd go through Yuan.
I see.
I'm not finished. I'd go through Yuan. But what you've said is true, and I myself warned you that we must avoid a major battle. I now believe, as you do, that Caliban will be the best option.
Then may I assume the ships of the Republic and the Rift will follow my orders to go to Caliban?
Yes, Captain Geary. Getting the rest of the Alliance fleet to go there will be your task alone, I'm afraid.
She thinks that'll be a problem. I hadn't thought that far. The fleet's ship commanders followed me out of the Syndic home system, but they were facing imminent death, and even then some of them wanted to debate things. They're all tired and want to get home.
I regret to say, I know little of your personal life, Captain Geary. Did you leave anyone behind?
It depends how you mean that. My father and mother were still alive. My brother was married. He didn't have any kids.
No life partner?
No. Nothing worked out.
A blessing, perhaps.
In light of what happened to me, yeah. I always thought they'd have time to figure out how to extend the lifespan by now.
Alas, no. You know what's happened every time they've tried? Nature will let us keep humans healthy and strong, nearly up to the end. But come the end, still does, even though scientists have taken the human body apart down to the quantum level and rebuilt it in an effort to change that.
It's enough to give someone religion.
It's certainly enough to make someone think about it. Is there an ancestral home?
Not unless they built one since the last time I was back.
Where will you go when we return to Alliance space?
I don't know. There's somebody I need to look up on the Dreadnought, wherever that ship is.
You know someone on a ship back in Alliance space?
Not really. I have a message for her, though, that somebody asked me to deliver. After that, maybe I'll go to Kasatka.
Kasatka?
It was a nice place once. I hear it's still nice.
Kasatka? I do not think your fate lies on Kasatka, Captain Geary.
Do you foretell the future as well as read minds?
All I read are people, Captain. Thank you for your time and for your confidences.
Caliban? But the way home lies through Yuan.
Geary had invited Desjani to his quarters to explain his plan before taking it to the bridge and the rest of the crew.
Captain, the Syndics know you're thinking that. They'll be there.
But not in enough strength.
How can you know that? You told me yourself. The Syndic ships in their home system could hypernet to, Zaki, and then jump to Yuan in a little less time than it'll take us to get to Corvus, transit that system, and jump to Yuan. They could have their entire damn fleet there, except for the ships pursuing us, which would come out of the jump exit and hit us from the rear.
But Yuan...
I'm sorry, Tanya. I know how much you want to get home. I want to get us there, too.
The Alliance needs this fleet, Captain Geary. And it needs Dauntless, and what Dauntless carries. The sooner, the better.
The Syndics will be waiting for us at Yuan, Tanya. If we go that way, we won't get home.
They understand us too well, don't they? The Syndics knew we'd jump at the bait they offered, the chance to hit their home system. And now they'll know we'll head straight home through Yuan.
I'm afraid so.
But you see clearer than that. You know we must take a longer route.
Maybe I just don't have the same emotional need to get home as badly as you other people do. I'm going to notify all ships of our planned destination before we leave Jump.
Captain. Sir, you must inform the ship's commanding officers of this decision in person.
I've been told that if we transmit it and jump, there's zero chance of the Syndics ever intercepting the message. And in any case, I'm not going to put it to a vote.
I'm not saying you should put it to a vote, Captain, but you need to tell them yourself. Look, I know this isn't how you did things in the old days, but it's how we're used to doing things now. Sir, you must lead personally. You can't do that by sending a brief text message.
Tanya, we're probably going to be awfully busy every second this fleet is in the Corvus system. Even if the Syndics don't send ships jumping into the system right on our tails, they'll still be coming at some point. We don't know what kind of defenses the Syndics have in Corvus. We'll need to decide what facilities to ransack, overcome, and overawe any resistance. Face it, my gut tells me Tashani is right. I had to convince her in person about Yuan. If she's refusing to be convinced now, it's because her professional judgment says I need to talk those other ship commanders into going to Caliban. Nice to know just Johnny won't cave when she thinks I'm wrong, even if she does believe I'm the ancestor's gift to this fleet. Okay, Tanya, you win. As soon as we're certain no immediate Syndic pursuit is coming out of the jump point on our tails, I'll call a conference and tell everyone in person that we're going to Caliban and not Yuan. Okay? I'll also tell them why we're going to Caliban and not Yuan.
Thank you, Captain. I hope you understand.
I do. And I thank you for making clear your recommendation.
Whatever waits for us at Corvus can't be too dangerous, Captain Geary. They won't even know the outcome of the battle in the Syndic home system.
Maybe we'll be able to use that somehow. But Corvus is so close to the Syndic homeworld, it might be a tough nut.
It's not on the Syndic hypernet.
That obviously means more than I realize. Explain it to me, please.
I just assumed you knew, but how could you? The hypernet lets someone go very quickly from wherever they are to wherever they want to be. They don't have to go through other places to get there.
Ah, so with the system jump drives, you have to jump through systems within range to eventually reach where you're headed.
Yes. Many, many systems only mattered because people had to go through them to get to somewhere else. They didn't have any special resources or other significance. Once a hypernet is up, all that passing through traffic vanishes. No. The only reason someone will go to them now is if they have personal reasons. But if the system does have something special, it'll be on the hypernet. Some have put their resources into trying to get hypernet gates, but few have succeeded. Some have tried to make themselves special in some way so others would lobby for a gate for them. Again, few have managed that. Most were never that wealthy to begin with, and have been slowly declining as trade bypasses them and they lose touch with technological and cultural developments being shared through the hypernet. The best and brightest people from such systems always seek to emigrate to hypernet-linked systems as well. Of course.
I see. A bit like me. Isolated and increasingly outdated. Bypassed by the hypernet and by history. I wonder how some of these Syndic systems will react when I bring the Alliance fleet through. At least they'll be part of history again. We'll exit jump at Corvus in another week and find out just how that system has fared since being bypassed by the Syndic hypernet. I'd better work on my speech to the ship commanders and keep praying that the Syndic plan wasn't devious enough to include setting a trap inside Corvus for any Alliance ships that managed to jump out of their home system.
The star known to humanity as Corvus glowed like a tiny, bright coin against the star-dappled black of normal space as the Alliance fleet leaped out of jump. Geary, trying hard not to show how tense he was, looked down toward his armchair controls and saw his hand gripping the chair so tightly his fingers were white. He took a deep breath and stared at the display, willing it to produce the information he needed.
No mines.
Geary just nodded. If there had been a minefield laid at the jump point exit, they'd have already found it the hard way. But he'd felt safe in gambling that there wouldn't be mines here. Even when system jump drives had been the only way to get from star to star, there hadn't been many jump points guarded by minefields, because they were as much a hazard to friendly shipping jumping back into normal space as they were to enemies. Deep inside Syndic territory, or Alliance territory for that matter, resources never would have been wasted on deploying and maintaining minefields, which was the only nice thing Geary could think of about being trapped so deep inside Syndic territory.
No nearby shipping detected on initial scans, Captain.
The report didn't mean much. They'd exited the jump point about 1 billion kilometers from Corvus. But Geary had long ago stopped thinking in terms of kilometers when it came to space navigation. Instead, he paid attention to the light distance readout that reported they were 8.5 light hours from the star. If the very old records they were relying on had been accurate, the main inhabited world orbiting Corvus was about 1.2 light hours from its star. That meant whatever the fleet's sensors were now seeing and analyzing around that world was a picture well over 7 hours old. Aside from that single habitable world, Corvus boasted only 3 other satellites worthy of the name planet. One was a battered rock in a slightly eccentric orbit less than 1 light hour from the star, another a gas giant about 6 light hours out, and farthest out, a frozen snowball of a world, the orbit of which had it not much more than 0.5 light hour away from the jump point, which meant that frozen world was also about 0.5 light hour away from the Alliance fleet.
Captain Dejani, it used to be routine for the Syndics to maintain defensive bases near jump points. The same sort of thing we did. I understand the Syndics have kept a lot of those bases active.
We always assume the old bases remain active. If a hypernet gate is built, that gets new defenses. But for stars without hypernet, Alliance policy has been that if defensive bases are to be kept in-system, then it's not worth the cost of moving them. The Syndics seem to have followed the same policy.
That makes sense. Why waste money? The question is whether they'll have bothered with maintaining a base this far inside their territory.
Geary watched the display, where a slowly expanding sphere around the fleet ships marked the area where something like a real-time picture could be established. The sphere still looked ridiculously small against the size of the star system they were invading. Fortunately, it would soon cover the orbit of the frozen world.
That means that they still have a base here. It'll be there.
We'll know soon enough. Initial optical and full-spectrum scans show installations with heat signatures. So, something's still active there. But we need more data. There's definitely not a major naval force nearby, though. We'd be seeing some signs of that by now, even if the information was time-late.
Space traffic in the system seemed light. Geary, unconsciously anticipating the sort of system jump traffic he'd been used to, instead saw no interstellar shipping passing through en route to the various jump locations. What in-system traffic had been spotted, running between the inhabited planet and what must be various off-planet mining and manufacturing sites, was confined to the plane of the system and clustered among the inner planets. Where the hell was everybody? Geary had to remind himself that thanks to the hypernet, everybody didn't have to go through Corvus or systems like it anymore. Geary tapped a communication circuit, having painstakingly learned how to use his controls during the jump to Corvus.
This is Captain Geary for Captain Duelos and Captain Talev. You are to take the 2nd and 4th Battlecruiser squadrons and assume positions covering the jump exit. If any Syndic forces come through there in immediate pursuit, they must be destroyed before they can get past you. That is all.
Geary could almost hear the anticipation of one-sided slaughter in Duelos's and Tulev's voices as they rogered up for the order. On his scan, Geary watched the heavy combatants of the 2 squadrons swinging around and moving back toward the jump point. The battlecruisers were able to accelerate quickly for their size, but were comparatively lightly defended, since their acceleration had been purchased by adding more propulsion power at the expense of defensive screen capability. He'd have to hold them there long enough to nail any Syndics coming through on the heels of the Alliance fleet, but not leave them isolated as the rest of the fleet moved away. Just a simple matter of timing, with 7 big warships and the lives of their crews riding on Geary's ability to get it right.
Captain Duelos, have your ships lay a minefield around the jump exit, slave to the local star so it maintains position.
Yes, sir.
The Alliance fleet had taken some heavy losses in the Syndic home system from mines laid as part of the ambush, so Geary didn't begrudge any desire by Alliance sailors for retaliation on that count. Another tap on a circuit to communicate with the entire fleet.
All units, with the exception of the 2nd and 4th Battlecruiser squadrons, are to assume standard fleet attack formation Alpha 6 immediately upon receipt of this message.
The units of the fleet, jumbled by the battle in the Syndic home system and the pell-mell retreat through the jump point, hadn't been able to reform while in jump space, and now needed to resume the semblance of an orderly formation again. Geary watched on his display as the ships and squadrons slowly acknowledged an order that took a few light minutes to reach the farthest ships, trying not to shake his head at how scattered the fleet was.
The fleet is still proceeding in system at 0.1 light speed. It's going to take some of those ships quite a while to reach their assigned positions.
If we slow the fleet, individual ships will have an easier time taking station. But I don't want to risk slowing the fleet until we've learned more about whatever Syndic forces we're hopefully surprising here.
Holding back never won a battle.
Geary was still mentally shaking his head at Desjani's statement when a chime sounded to call attention to the display. He watched as the time-late data from the inhabited world scrolled by. Analysis of imagery and things like chemical byproducts in the atmosphere indicated the world was still running an industrialized economy, but with signs of inactive facilities and apparently not as heavily populated as expected, given the length of time humans had been settled there. That matched what he'd heard about those systems that had been bypassed by the HyperNet system slowly dying on the vine. A score of objects orbited the world, 7 tagged as cold and probably mothballed, and 2 labeled as likely military installations. No military shipping was visible in the more than 8-hour-old picture.
The installation on the fourth world is active and assessed military. 2 minor combatants are active near the base as of 41 minutes time late.
Geary jerked his head around and stared at the system display of the frozen planet. They still didn't have anything like a real-time picture of the area near the Syndic base, but as of 40 minutes ago, there had been 2 Syndic ships there.
We arrived in system less than 10 minutes ago, so they won't see us for another half hour. By then, we'll be a lot closer to them. Is the identification of those Syndic ships accurate? We're sure that's what they are.
The IDs on the ships near the base? Yes, Captain Geary. Type and class ID is certain. Model is tentative.
I'll be damned. We called those things nickel corvettes in my time.
Nickel?
Yeah, like the coins. They're useful, but they don't last long if you need to use them. Those ships were half obsolete when I was last in combat.
Huh. I've never seen that class of ships before. I suppose those corvettes must have been left here because it was easier to leave them in the hands of the local Corvus authorities than it would have been to dispose of them.
Probably.
Geary imagined himself at that Syndic base or on those ships as the Alliance fleet came pouring out of the jump point. If the age of those Syndic ships was any indication, this system didn't even really qualify as a backwater in the war. Decades at least since Corvus had been involved in the Alliance Syndicate World's War. Aside from sending in taxes and doubtless occasional shipments of draft-age young adults, for a few more minutes or a few more hours, depending on where in the system they were, they'd still think they were a backwater. Then they'd finally begin to see the Alliance fleet arriving, ship after ship becoming visible as the light from their arrival finally reached the various Syndic watchers. And they wouldn't believe it for a few minutes, would they? Wouldn't believe that here was the war arriving. In sudden and overwhelming force.
Captain Geary, this is Commander Zeus on the Truculent. We're within weapons range of an active radar emitter focused on the jump point.
This is Geary. Take it out. I know that's just a navigational aid, Captain Desjani, but it's probably sending contact reports to that base.
I concur. Though the reports will be going at light speed, so they won't get there before visual sightings of us can take place from the base.
Every couple of minutes helps. Is the base itself sending out any active sensor emissions?
No, sir. Did you expect that?
No. Even in my primitive time, It was obvious that radar would take twice as long to spot something as visual sensor would. Since the radar pulse has to go in return, while the light from the object only has to travel that distance once.
The difference in time was insignificant on a planet's surface, but when the size of a battlefield was measured in light hours, it mattered a lot.
Sir, I didn't mean any disrespect.
I know that. I also know I'm out of date in a lot of ways, so I'd rather you keep on assuming I don't know something. We're safer that way. And frankly, Captain, I trust you with knowledge of my fallibility.
Yes, sir. You already know the trust that I and my crew have in you.
I wish this wouldn't take so long. Too bad we can't do faster than light microjumps inside star systems.
Yes. The waiting has always been the hardest part for me, too. We can see the enemy. We know where they are. But it'll still be almost 4.5 hours before we get close enough to that base on the fourth world to turn it into craters.
You could go faster.
Both Desjani and Geary turned to see that Co-President Rion had come onto the bridge of the Dauntless. Rion looked directly at Geary.
Couldn't you?
Geary shrugged, trying to ignore the disdainful expression he could see out of the corner of his eye on Desjani's face.
We could. I don't want to.
Why not?
Rion came forward and sat in an unoccupied seat designated for observers, strapping herself in with carefully precise movements.
Because, among other things, the ships of this fleet are already averaging 0.1 light speed. We're in normal space and subject to the rules there. That means the faster we go, the worse we'll run into relativistic effects. To put it in the simplest possible terms, our perspective of everything outside of this ship gets increasingly distorted the faster we go. At 0.1 light, we can still figure out what we're looking at with some accuracy. As we get closer to the speed of light, it gets harder to tell where everything really is. I'm having enough trouble now figuring out where the enemy is located and where their ships are going. The last thing I need is to have to wonder where my own ships are, too.
I understood these presented images that compensated for relativistic effects when necessary.
Madam Co-President, the systems can fairly accurately compensate for relativistic effects on this ship because they know what the ship is doing. For any other ship, the systems can only estimate from what it can observe. We'd get a time-late and distorted picture of the other ship, and the resulting corrections vary in accuracy. The image we get could differ significantly from where the other ship is actually located, and from what its actual course and speed vectors are at any moment.
Captain Desjani, we've received a challenge from Syndic Defense Force IN system.
Now that was quick. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that base on the fourth planet must only now be picking up visual on the first fleet ship coming out of the jump point.
Agreed. That signal must have come from a Syndic source about 15 light minutes out from the jump point. Find it.
Yes, ma'am.
It only took a few moments, thanks to the fact that the fleet was spread out so much. Using the bearings from which the Syndic signal had been received by different, widely separated ships, the source was easily localized. Full-spectrum sensors focused on the spot, finally picking out a small object.
It's tiny. That's no ship. Not a crewed object, either. Assess the source of the signal to be an automated traffic management assistant.
Why didn't we spot it before now?
It seems to have been out here a long time, ma'am. Very heavily pitted. Preliminary sweeps assessed it as most likely an ancient piece of debris drifting through the system.
Geary, pondering how that description also matched the last century of his own existence, rubbed his chin as he studied the display. The closest ship to the object, the cruiser Ardent, was less than a light minute away.
That thing won't be equipped with weaponry, but it might have stuff that'll help the Syndic base track us. And it could have a self-destruct capability that could damage any ship that wanders too close. Better safe than sorry. Ardent, this is Captain Geary on the Dauntless. Get rid of that thing.
Ardent, all right, it's gone.
Geary watched his display, knowing that it would be several minutes at best before he'd see the indications that Ardent had blown away the satellite.
Should we answer the signal, Captain Desjani? It must have sent a report to the base.
Yeah, that report will arrive a little after they get visuals on us, I guess.
Geary thought the problem through, aware that he was setting in motion events and decisions that would play out for the next several hours. He tried not to think about how many lives in the Corvus system and the fleet rested on what he decided now.
Captain Dishjani, please inform the Syndic authorities that we are here to accept their surrender. Broadcast that through the entire system.
So far, everything indicates there's very little in the way of defenses here, and what they have is hopelessly outdated. Defeating them won't be hard at all.
No, but we'll get a lot more supplies and usable parts off of them if they surrender quietly than if we have to smash them into submission. We may even convince them to pony up more if they think it'll keep us from wrecking everything in this system.
Isn't it better to ensure that their capability to resist is eliminated?
No. Losing the Syndic assets in this system would mean nothing to the Syndic worlds, but every ship damaged and weapon expended here means something to the Alliance. We're better off winning without a fight. If we broadcast a surrender demand now, it'll arrive everywhere in the system about a half hour after our presence has been detected. They'll have had time to realize how much force we have relative to them. Time to get really scared, and that's when our demand will arrive.
A few minutes later, Dauntless broadcast the message as the Alliance fleet continued falling toward the inner system at a tenth of the speed of light.
To all the ships part of the Syndic fleet, this is the Dauntless.
Geary watched his display, willing time and distance to pass more quickly. The Syndic base should have spotted the Alliance fleet by now. But even if the Nickel Corvettes got moving immediately, the Dauntless wouldn't see that movement for another 10 minutes. He concentrated on his own ships, trying to sort out the tangle of movement vectors so he could figure out how well they were doing at getting into formation. Judging from how hard it was to read their movements, his ships weren't doing all that well. Granted, the fleet's speed made repositioning more difficult, but still, the individual ships seemed to be doing a poor job of straightening themselves out.
The Syndic commander has responded to our demand that they surrender.
Okay.
Geary checked the time. The response to his surrender demand must have been sent very quickly. He took a moment to pick the right control, then found himself gazing at the image of an elderly man in an obsessively neat but worn Syndic executive class officer uniform.
This is to acknowledge receipt of your transmission. Your request must be denied. I'm not permitted to surrender any forces or installations within this system. Transmission end.
Our request must be denied. Is he kidding? It sounds like he thinks we asked permission to hold a dance.
In a few more hours, we'll bring his headquarters down around his head.
Maybe. Until then, there's no reason I can't keep trying to get the idiot to see reason. Don't worry. I won't beg.
I didn't.
Don't worry about it. Let me send this transmission personally. This is the Alliance fleet. Captain John Geary commanding, entering Corvus system. We're here to accept your surrender. As you can tell from our arrival vectors, we've come from the Syndicate World's home system. Our work there is done for now.
Geary tried to put the right amount of victorious arrogance into that misleading statement. If the Syndic commander thought it meant the Alliance had trashed the Syndic home system, it might help overawe him.
We expect all Syndic World's military forces and any local forces to lay down their arms, deactivate defense systems, and cease any form of resistance. It should be obvious to you that we have more than enough firepower to enforce our demand, and that any resistance on your part would be meaningless. Failure on your part to surrender quickly guarantees the futile deaths of your defenders and serious damage to installations within this system. I expect your next message to be an agreement to surrender. If that doesn't get through to him.
A hell, Lance will.
Yeah, if it comes to that. Still no movement by the Corvette as of 10 minutes ago. Interesting. They're just maintaining the same positions in orbit relative to the Syndic base.
Perhaps they're planning to use them as part of the perimeter defense of the base.
That'd be awfully dumb, tying down ships into static defensive positions, even if we didn't outnumber them so hugely. I think there's another reason, but...
Syndic cruiser detected orbiting the fourth planet.
Just one?
Geary watched the report scroll in. He didn't recognize the class of the light cruiser, but the system declared it to be an obsolete design.
Are these specs right?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Look at the propulsion system on that thing. Why'd they stick so much propulsion capability on a light cruiser?
We don't know. The design hasn't been encountered and is known only through intelligence sources. Apparently, only a few of those were built, And if they saw battle, the records didn't get back to us.
Geary nodded absently, thinking that the only reason the records wouldn't have gotten back was if the Alliance force involved had been cut to ribbons. The light cruiser wasn't heavily armed, though. It just had that honking big propulsion system.
Hopefully I won't have to worry what the idea was behind that. If the Syndic commander surrenders, I can ask someone. Otherwise, that cruiser will be a lot of junk floating in close formation after we blow a million holes in it. The cruiser and the Corvettes are still hanging around the planet. That's a hopeful sign.
It'll make them easier targets, anyway.